Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Tom Dormer is back with us today to discuss racism in the community and in the penal system, and to which level of accountability is or is not sufficient. Tom, as well as others, have experienced both the good and the bad of both worlds, behind the prison walls and in the communities. So let's welcome Tom Dormer once again and his friend. Tom, are you on with us?
Yes, I am.
I want to apologize. I am so late because I was so caught up in other things, and I just realized.
You don't have to apologize.
Please forgive me.
It's okay.
Okay, Tom, I wanted to thank you so much. I wanted to have you speak a little bit about yourself again, maybe introduce our other guest, and we'll take it from there.
Okay, well, I have a possible two guests joining, so who's ever on the phone, just speak up so I can introduce you, know which one it is.
Okay.
Anybody on there?
Is he on? Yes. I don't know if they can hear us. Let me just see.
Okay.
Hello?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Okay, that's Loke.
I can hear
Loke, that's you?
Oh, okay.
Hey, Loke, that's
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here.
All right, cool. Just because I got another brother calling, so she's going to have me introduce you a little bit and introduce myself. You know, just for a new audience if they're listening and things like that. So my name's Tom. Currently I'm in California, but just a super, super fast version, a little bit about me. So a little credibility and a little background is when I was 18, I had a scholarship for soccer, never in trouble, never partied, never broke the law really. And out of a lot of bad circumstances, kind of just gave up on life. When you do an armed robbery, some people think that, you know, you do it for money or drugs or things like that. I did it for neither. Kind of just gave up, did it with a toy gun, was really weak mentally, never had a role model in my life. Like, you know, until I went to prison, I never had a grown man ever tell me like they were proud of me or, you know, that, you know, to motivate me or to give me life lessons. I basically had to learn everything on myself. So kind of just gave up. I ended up serving almost 5 years in prison. At the age of 19, I was out on bail for a year, 19, to, you know, when I was past 23. And, you know, I met Loke a little over three years into my prison bit. So I kind of had my credibility. I kind of, you know, was vet status, quote unquote, but I was still the younger brother. And Loke was, when I went to this prison, Loke was easily the biggest figure in this prison, in my opinion, just the most memorizing figure, especially, you know, for someone like me. Even though I had role models up until that point, I wouldn't have been where I was at unless I had people like Pooley, Franklin, Putter. A lot of individuals put their hands on my shoulders. But when I went to the prison where I met Loke, he was the workout king. He was the motivational guy. And he really put me under his shoulders, even though he still had basically a life bit. He was sentenced to life in prison, in my opinion. So, you know, for him to put his hand around me and prepare me for when I was getting out, he would ask me questions and motivate me and make sure I was on my A game all the time, no laxical days, and really just pushed me really far to get to the point where when I was ready to be released, I could be released running instead of walking or walking backwards. I could be released running. And since I've been out for 4 years, I've been running. So I've ran all the way to California. So, and we're doing things out here. But a little bit about him, I'm going to let him say a couple things about him, but a little bit about him. Like I said, you know, he runs the workout crew in his prison. He's a very influential human being in his prison. He's got probably the best reputation in that prison. And he was sentenced to over 30 years for, you know, a crime where if you look up, there's no evidence against him. And even worst case scenario, you know, he should have got a reckless endangerment or something, and he would have been out many years ago. So he's really a human being that we're working on getting out early. And we're working on getting a, you know, free Loke page, and we're working on getting awareness to his case, because with Truth and Sentencing in his case, he was just basically screwed over by the system for, you know, the area he lived in, the color of his skin. And basically, once you're sentenced to truth in sentencing in the state of Wisconsin, it's extremely hard to get your case overturned, overruled to a lesser degree by that many years, you know, because there's no parole board. There's no board where you can go up in front of with your accomplishments. You know, he's got a long list of them. And to show that, you know, he's got a lot of support still from his family all the way in California even. So I let him take it over, a little bit about him. But that's just, you know, my background from him from, you know, all the years. Now I've known him, you know, over 5 years. But at the time, I knew him for a year. I did a year in prison with him. And then we've kept in touch every single day since I've been out. And I've had a couple rough days out here. And he's been the first one that's contacted me during most of them. He knows what I'm talking about. So, Loke, just kind of tell your side a little bit, and then we'll have Leon ask us some questions.
Good morning, okay. Everyone.
What is your name again? I'm sorry, Loke. Yes.
Can you Landris, say a.k.a. Loke. My name is Landris.
Landris.
Can you hear me? Yes, a.k.a.
Yes.
Loke. Tom likes to call me by my nickname, but... my government name is Landers.
Landers?
Yes.
Is that L-A-D-E-R-S?
L-A-N-D-R-I-S.
Oh, D-R-I-S, okay. You know,
yes,
I have a Massachusetts accent, and sometimes people laugh when I say garage or something like that, and I know that other people in other states or other places also have their own kind of like language. And so sometimes I have a difficult time. So it's Landry.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Like I said, Tom likes to call me by my nickname, which is fine also. But yeah, for the listeners, Landry, aka Loke.
L-O-K.
As Tom always referred to him. L-O-K.
Oh, L-O-K. Okay. You know, that's one thing. Since in the 20 years I've been advocating for the incarcerated men, women, and youth. I'll tell you, they all have nicknames. They all, like West Side and Sincere and all these different kinds of nicknames.
Yeah.
But
well,
Tom
actually,
never did tell us what his nickname was.
Yeah, well, actually, it's I have that nickname since childhood. My aunt gave me the nickname Loki, and Loki is just short for Loki, actually. But, yeah, my aunt gave me that name when I was little. Don't ask me why, because I don't know. I couldn't even tell you.
Well, my name,
like
my nickname
say,
was Lonnie. Lonnie, and that's a man's name, L-O-N-N-I-E, but that's what they used to call me. So we all have a nickname.
Yeah, it could be universal, I think. But I'd like to say before we get started that it's definitely an honor and a privilege to be on the show. As Tom explained before, I've been incarcerated 18 years now on a 35-year sentence. For an attempted homicide conviction. I met Tom when he was here at the prison that I'm currently housed at right now. And, you know, he's a very humble young man. I like the way he carried himself. He's very respectful. He was very, you know, just he was different for a guy of his age, you know, and his background. He was very different, but I took an instant liking to him, and our bond almost became instantaneous. As he said, yeah, I was known for running the workout class, and I was also a barber, so I used to cut his hair also. But, you know, Tom's a very humble guy, and he's always a good guy. He's always been the same since I've known him. You know, he likes to credit me for, you know, being a big brother and his inspiration, but, you know, he's also an inspiration as well, you know. He was always positive. Yeah, you know, all of us have days where we might have bad days or we're stressed out or we're depressed about something, and you know, but, you know, and that's when sometimes you just need someone to kind of pick you up or, you know, let you know that, hey, man, it's going to be all right. I got your back and, you know, whatever. But I do respect and value his friendship, and I do look at him as a little brother as well. So, yeah, I've been trying to get my conviction overturned to get back in court. So far, I have been unsuccessful in my attempts to do so. But like Tom said, we're still fighting. We're still trying to put some things together and work on some things. And any questions for the audience or anything like that, any topics we need to discuss, let's get to it. Let's address it.
Tom has talked a lot about he wants to do a lot. He wants to help in your situation and others. And we were going to be talking about that because, and as you say, Tom is a humble person. There was a guest on, not a guest, but she was on the show Tanzania, and she was talking with Tom, and I keep getting these robocalls. But she was kind of critical. She is a critical type, but she was amazed because after the show, she had told me, she said he was really humble. She said he could have gotten upset with me with the questions I was asking and everything, but she said he was so humble. And I said, that's what I was talking about. I said, you're going to find people like that. And one of the things, and Tom will tell you, I'm very, when it comes to stereotyping prisoners, that's my pet peeve because I, not only having a loved one inside, but also working with the incarcerated men, women, and youth nationwide for 20 years, I no longer do nationwide work, but in all those years, I have met so many individuals who are in prison, either for wrongful convictions or for first-time mistakes. And it's unfair that people in the communities, in the country, should judge them, should look at them as anything different than what they are. And that's another human being that just made a mistake, or some of them have been made to stumble. So what you're talking about is something that should not even need to be explained. We have, like Tom brought up too, with the protesting, the international protesting over the racism, the brutality, the police, the law enforcement abuses and everything. We have people that are in prison that have done less than a lot of these law enforcement and a lot of these prison officials and guards. There were so many people in prison that deserve a second chance or that deserve to be free because they didn't commit a crime. And here we are having overseers that are very much brutal, that are very criminal-like, that are very barbaric. Those are the ones that are overseeing these people. So how in the world do people better themselves if this is what they have to go through? It only brings more frustration and anger and pain in their life. And I want the audience to know this because this is very important.
Exactly.
But again, like with prisoners, people in prison that are of color, and I'm not saying that it's just the ones of color, but what I'm saying is a lot of times they're looked at a little bit different, and their opportunities at freedom become a lot more difficult than others.
Yes, this is true. You know, the public, you know, sometimes the people have a certain perception of guys that are incarcerated, guys that are in prison. You know, some think that, you know, everybody are criminals or everybody are violent and don't need to be back into society. And, you know, just all type of different perceptions, you know, and a lot of the perceptions are based on what they may see on television or what other people may have put into their ear or what they've been taught to believe. You know, until they come inside a prison and see, you know, and be able to interact with some guys that are incarcerated, maybe some of the public perception would change. You know, I talk to a lot of students at a community college that are majoring in criminal justice. You know, so I do talk with those groups as well. Like Tom explained, as far as Wisconsin, I am under the Wisconsin Truth in Sentencing Law, which means that I don't get a chance to go in front of a parole board or get an early release. You know, I have to do day for day. You know, no matter what programs I complete, I've completed many programs. I've done all type of volunteer work. I have all type of certificates, all type of achievements and, you know, good behavior. And, you know, despite all of that, I still will not be able to have the opportunity to earn an earlier release. You know, if I get a release, it has to come from the court, you know. And it's just sad because now I'm at the point to where I'm just sitting here just doing dead time. Like, I've done everything that they've asked me, everything that they expect of me, and there's still no reward. So you would think that I would walk around you know, mad, angry, pissed off every day, all day. I would be mad at the world, you know, but I'm still remaining humble. I'm still remaining patient. You know, I'm still trying to keep a level head and just, you know, be calm about the situation and pray to God will, you know, give me a blessing and give me the opportunity to get out and be a productive citizen.
I have two questions. How long have you been in now?
I've been in 18 years now.
Okay, 18 years. And the other thing I'd like to say is a lot of prisoners, and I think this is very important, a lot of prisoners are asking that we focus on trying to change the policies, public opinion. As far as being citizens of the United States, a lot of prisoners are asking for their voting rights to be reestablished because they are citizens of the U.S. They feel like even if you're in prison, even if you're serving a lifetime or 30 years or whatever, that you should be allowed to vote. And to me, this is very important because there are so many people, politicians who are for the cause, who are looking at abolishing these harsh sentences, and they're at a standstill because of the laws. So if prisoners really, really are motivated to start promoting that and spreading the word so that other prisoners and write to the politicians, write to anyone you can to start promoting the fact that once you're able to vote, you can vote for people who are trying to help or vote for people who do not want to see you incarcerated for these long periods of time. This is something we need to get out to all the prisoners, not only the prisoners, their loved ones, and everyone else. The people that we're seeing coming into politics are strictly against, most of them are strictly against the release of prisoners. And I don't know if I mentioned this to Tom or the audience, some of them know, but I've been in coordinating with Jan Banning from the Netherlands, and he's going to be having someone come on our show at some point in time to talk about the successes in their prisons in the Netherlands. We also know the successes in England. Steve Willett has spoken about that. We have Franz Kurz from Germany. These are people from different countries who do not have mass incarceration, and their programs are run humanely, and their programs are appropriate. In this country, it's all about GEDs, like every prisoner is ignorant or has not had any kind of education. When we have people in prison, like yourself, and look at Tom, we have people in prison that are very educated. And this is another thing. One of the volunteers that I have in the organization is actually setting up a Facebook page, Instagram page, and she's working on some other areas where prisoners can actually start sending letters, start speaking out. We want to be the voice for all prisoners. And we have an outlet now where prisoners can write or they can have their families put together something for them to get it out on these pages, on these websites, so that people know exactly what you're going through. I'm going to say it with my own experience, and I know there are some prisoners, people in prison who are terrorists, who are habitual offenders, who are serial killers, but the majority of prisoners deserve a chance to have their voices heard and have something good come of what they're doing. And they need to reform these prisons. They need to defund the Department of Corrections nationwide. They need to defund law enforcement and put those money into programs where prisoners can come out and be in these long-term facilities getting the right treatment, the education, whatever it might be. These are issues that are a passion for me because I can't see anybody wasting the rest of their lives behind prison walls, being abused, deprived, provoked, harassed, set up. Those are people that are being tormented and tortured. This does not have to take place. And then to see so many people it's been proven that they've been innocent and they're still sitting in prison. That's another thing that really bothers me. Now, I'm not going to take up this whole show. I mean, you have an hour to talk. But I wanted to ask, now, is the Cardoza Project or the Innocence Project, are any of them working with you on your case?
No, not at the moment. The Innocence Project, I know a lot of at least here in Wisconsin, a lot of the Innocence Projects, they have a they have a log that's so long. So many people, you know, would like them to take a look at their case. And from my experience, a lot of the cases that they do end up taking on are like DNA cases, you know, cases to where they can go back and check DNA and things of that nature. So for the most part, my appeal process has been done with, you know, between me and my family and trying to, you know, retain lawyers. And, you know, and these lawyers are not cheap these days. You know, lawyers are expensive. A lot of them, especially appellate lawyers, they bill you by the hour. They charge an hourly rate, you know. So on average, it's probably $150 to $250 an hour. And, you know, I had two trials because my first trial, I actually had a hung jury my first trial. And they retried me, and they found me guilty in the second trial. I've had, you know, three or four appeals, and I've had numerous appeals. So, you know, my caseload is pretty extensive, you know, between all the trial transcripts and all the appeal transcripts. And so it's a lot of work involved, you know. One thing that I did want to say and point out, you mentioned something about, you know, the politicians and the legislators and the lawmakers. You know, they come up with these campaigns about being tougher on crime, and you know, they like the public to believe that, you know, all of these vicious, dangerous, violent criminals, you know, need to be put away and not be released. And, you know, based on my case, I am considered a violent offender based on my case. An individual was shot. No one is deceased. He didn't die, but he was shot. And, you know, he was injured. Based off of the shooting. But I'm saying that to say this. You know, we all know about the recidivism rates and the percentage of people that end up coming back to prison once they're released. But from my experience, out of the 18 years that I've been incarcerated, guys that do an extensive amount of time from anywhere from 10 to 15 to 20 to 25 years, I will say at least 97% of those guys do not end up coming back. And that's just my estimation. I'm sure that they have statistics based on this, based on a recidivism rate of people that have been incarcerated 15-plus years. However, that's a statistic that they never put out there. They never want you to see or even get an idea of guys that have been incarcerated for at least 15-plus years, how many of them do not end up coming back to prison?
Exactly.
Yeah, I got to jump in and say, I agree with Loke. Leona, I think you answered your question when you were kind of talking about releasing people in prison, why don't they do it, and the big, you know, conversation and topic to get it going. I think that the politicians, I think that they don't release people from prison because we have a history of evidence now. You know, we have a recidivism rate from the early 90s in our state that out of the early 90s, almost 30 years of evidence of logbooks. And the recidivism rate out of 30 years has only went up 5 years, and then it's decreased again. It's at the same number. Within like literally 2%, I'm looking up all the numbers right now. That's what I was kind of doing while I was letting Loke talk. And the recidivism rate doesn't change. So in order to go in front of Congress or go in front of the Senate or go in front of the court system to say, hey, you need to release prisoners, there's no evidence based saying when we release prisoners, they are going to succeed. There's no evidence. The evidence says that this amount will go back. This amount has went back for the last 15 years. I believe in Loke saying the more time they have served over time, you know, that's why people go back. Right now, technically, and the recidivism rate is a false rate. People don't understand. They just Google something, but they don't really know it. Do you know right now under the recidivism rate for the state of Wisconsin only goes up to 3 years. So I've been out 4 years. So technically, under the statistics of people that are white, that have served X amount of prison time, that have been released, I have already went under the statistic that I have succeeded. But right now, what if I go out and shoot somebody? and I go back to prison for life. Technically, I'm still under the recidivism rate that succeeded. The recidivism rate only holds you for 3 years. So it's a false number because they try to keep it at a lower, you know, 40%, 35%. They try to keep it at that number. But if they just did a recidivism rate of people that was incarcerated for prison and went back to prison, which is supposed to be the recidivism rate, that number would be extremely high. And that's what would worry the community. That's what would bring more awareness because people would notice a number at 80%. 85%, and then that would grasp the nation and the community saying, hey, you know, this guy's going to prison for 3 years, but 85% of the chance when you release him in 3 years around my grandkids or around my family, he is going to do something or the system is going to do something to get him locked back up. It doesn't work. But they try to keep the recidivism rate lower. Even in some states, I'm looking up right now, in some states in the Midwest, their recidivism rate only goes to 18 months. 18 months because they try to lie to the public to keep it in the 30% so they don't scare everybody. And I believe you answered your question of why doesn't Congress or why doesn't the court systems want to release people, because they know the system is wrong. They know the system does not work. So if they start releasing people, that's not going to change anything. They know they need to change the system, actually. They need to change the programs. They need to change the training, how the police officers are trained only 21 weeks in the United States. That's why Norway, I think you have to have 3 years of an experience for a police officer. And there was like 208 deadly shootings in Norway, I think, in like 30 years or something I've seen on Instagram. It's in a crazy number. And in Wisconsin, I mean, in the United States, there's just hundreds every year. So there's only 21 weeks in a high school diploma you need to be a police officer. What do you think the credentials are to be a correctional officer? Way, way less. Way, way less. Mm-hmm. There's no personal training. There's no – and 90% of these correctional officers, if not more, I'm being generous by only saying 90, has never talked to a human being that has been inside a prison beside – when they go into prison. And then I've talked about on the last show before I was cut off, I was going camping. I believe, in my opinion, of the prisons that I went in, the young COs, yes, don't get me wrong, you have the percentage that are garbage human beings from the get-go, but I believe the young COs, most of them, come in with a open heart, with a open mind. They don't know, and they get tainted by the old sergeants and the COs that have learned. When you're a human being, I've taken sociology and psychology, and when you're a human being, they show police officers go through and correction officers and jobs that you give a human being so much power, eventually it gets to their mind. We see this with billionaire CEOs. We see this with people with money. We see this with actors, athletes that get too much money over time. We see money get to human beings because they lose their humbleness. When you're a correctional officer and you come into work every day and you're nice and you come in with the right attitude, but one day you just come in and you just come in with the effort mindset and you start throwing people into segregation and you start just talking to people any type of way and you realize there's no punishment for it, you realize that there's nothing bad that can happen to you over 20 years, how do you think that CO is going to respond? Do you think he's going to come in with the same mindset he did 20 years ago? No, because he knows that when it comes to a inmate and a correctional officer, the correctional officer wins every time. There's not even a debate. Out here with the police officers, we've seen that mentality change over the last few weeks, but we've seen hundreds of years of the police officer's mentality saying, I know I'm going to win. I know I'm going to win. How many black people have been incarcerated because there were no cell phones? They know they're going to win. Now cell phones change the whole world, but in prison, there's no cell phones. There's no recording. There's no lawyers. There's no protest. There's nothing beside your word versus somebody's word that, he's a violent human being. He did a crime 18 years ago. We're going to throw him in the box because I said he did this. And that's it, period. There's no ifs, ands, or buts.
You know, you were just saying, Tom, someone from France sent me, her fiancé had written a letter to Representative Joe Kennedy, who was running for a higher position, repeated one. And the letter read, I am an SMI inmate being housed in Cedar Junction, DDU section. First and foremost, I just want to send you my sincere condolences on the recent loss of your two cousins. Losing anyone you care for his heart, but especially so with family. My heart goes out to you and the whole Kennedy family. What brought me here today, though, is in fact that we have several ongoing and reoccurring issues within the Department of Corrections, issues that a blind eye or deaf ear cannot be turned to. Right now, there is an epidemic going on which stemmed from the pandemic of COVID-19. This is very public information, and one would almost literally need to be living under a rock not to be aware. The entire world is affected by this deadly virus, some groups more than others, but nonetheless, everyone has been affected in some way. For better or for worse, there are hundreds of thousands of protesters marching the streets across the nation and across the world, calling attention to and demanding justice for the innocently slain men, women, and children at the hands of police, equality among all races, an end to police brutality, and change in our criminal justice system, to name a few. There are several things that need to be done. I believe citizens across the nation are doing a great job of bringing these issues to light. But what I'd personally like to focus on at this time are the rights of prisoners that are being violated right here in our own backyards, such as our right to have public relations and keep in contact with our families and loved ones in segregation units as well, via phone calls, visits, emails, etc. Our right to be able to exercise and or go out for fresh air daily, PPE and personal hygiene, sanitizer supplies to combat the further spreading of the virus, the deadly virus, the full amount of earned good credits, good time credits, access to law libraries, meals that meet the proper portion sizes for an average man, and or full access to canteen, a fair and impartial grievance system, disciplinary board, and protection from police brutality within these walls. On April 13, 2018, after passing the Massachusetts House of Representatives, the Mass Senate, and going through a conference committee process, the Omnibus Criminal Justice Reform Act was signed into law. The CJRA has many positive provisions spanning juvenile justice reform, protections for primary caretakers, mandatory minimums reform, Corey reform, reduction of fees and fines, bail reform, increased opportunities for diversion, decriminalization of certain low-level offense parency. I've not been in trouble for almost 3 years, yet my good behavior won't be rewarded. In fact, I'll still be sent to a maximum facility, although my 6 points warrant me a med facility transfer, a medium security. Starting the cycle all over, right now there are hunger strikes within our prison systems across the nation, including the Mass Department of Corrections, because laws like these and many others have been passed and yet not been enforced or promulgated time and time again. We have calls for reform and changes of or promises that are being made, but none which are being kept. Bills that are passed but not followed. When will the system take a look at its own faults instead of looking at down on ours? Because if we truly are united, then this would mean it's an issue for all of us to deal with and not just the selective few. As I stated earlier, I'm an inmate who suffers from serious mental illness, SMI, being housed in a disciplinary detention unit here at the Cedar Junction. By law, I should not be housed here. But once again, when nobody enforces the law, corners are cut. For whatever reason, the stigmas and stereotypes that come with being an inmate paints us all as being unintelligent. I am far from that, and many of us are. This country has continued to send people to prison for decades upon decades, and yet crime has not stopped. In fact, in many cases, it's actually growing. Our country spends more money on keeping our children, mothers, and fathers in prisons each year than putting those same people through college and aiding them on having a proper chance in life. I'm no mathematician, but if our country is made up of approximately 80% Europeans and the other 20% being a collect of all other minorities, yet our prison's ethics makeup is predominantly minority-based, how can we then say that there isn't a systematic racism geared towards destroying the families of minorities? The system wasn't built to protect blacks. It was built to neglect blacks. I know some would say that there are just as many, if not more, whites in prison. However, what I would say to them, same people, to go and visit a few prisons and tell me what your eyes see. It's very easy to doctor reports in order to make things as though the ratio is evenly racially balanced. But when you see it with your own eyes and realize that blacks are incarcerated at far more higher rates than whites, often do not have the funds for a private attorney, and are often given larger sentences for the same crimes, it's sort of hard to deny that when the proof is in the pudding. Boston Police Commissioner William Gross came out and addressed the city of Boston a few weeks ago by blaming prisoners who have recently been released early due to the COVID-19 epidemic for the spike of crimes in our cities. Although he has absolutely no proof to back his statement and tells the media when asked about this, "I can't get into details because they're going the ongoing investigations," he continues to push his own agenda and spread propaganda. In one interview, even saying something along the lines, "I'd rather them die in prison from the virus than come home and commit crimes." He also said something to the effect of, "Let these people sleep in your homes and see if you'd make the same decisions to let them." He then goes on to make a hypocritical statement by saying the acts of a few bad officers shouldn't spoil the bunch. So why should the acts of a few bad prisoners spoil the overwhelmingly amount of good prisoners who want to do the right thing and come home to lead positive lives? Everybody's intentions are not the same. We are all individuals and should be treated as such. People can change. Prisoners can change. So why not let us change and do away with these barbaric laws and systems that are not in with times? When you lock people up and throw away the key, ask yourself, what incentives do you give them to change? Why do you think prison environments have been so violent? When you give somebody hope, it changes their lives. When you take that away, well, we've seen how it works. These are just a couple of questions I believe lawmakers need to be asked when they legislate. But surely you'll see change when these police officers are held to their same standards and laws that we are. Police officers are sworn to protect and serve. They are trained to de-escalate situations, not instigate. They are trained to disarm and restrain people and to use deadly force only when necessary. But more often than not, we've witnessed simple apprehensions turn deadly when other alternatives could have been used. So why, with all the knowledge and training these police officers have, do they receive special treatment when it comes to breaking those same laws? Personally, I feel as though it's an act of treason when a police officer breaks his oath and should be treated as such. I strongly believe they should receive harsher penalties, which would ultimately deter rogue officers from doing wrong. Us common folk don't have any police tactical training, and most of us don't even know the law until it is thrown at us. Now, I'll be the first to say that ignorance of the law is no excuse, but neither is knowledge of the law. So why are common folks with a lesser knowledge of the law prosecuted at the full extent of the law and treated much differently than those who are supposed to uphold the law? The system is broken and needs to be torn down and rebuilt. I've been hearing a lot about good cops and overshadowed by the rogue of bad seeds of police officers who take it upon themselves to break their oath by failing to protect and serve, and the peaceful protesters who mean well yet lose their momentum and are silenced because of the spotlight given to the looting, anarchists, and destruction caused by those few bad seeds. My question is, why is the same concept not being used when prisoners are mentioned? There are much more prisoners who have been incarcerated and changed their lives for the better than not, many of which who return to society and become your neighbors, successful business owners, positive influences, and role models for our youth, who actually can empathize because these people have actually been in their shoes. I strongly believe we should be treated as equals, but we are all individuals, are we not? Therefore, our system should not be a one-size-fits-all, because what works for you may not work for me, and what works for her may not work for him. I believe we need to go a step further than reform. I believe we need to reconstruct our policing system, our prison system, and our Constitution of the United States. Let's not forget our founding fathers were mostly slave owners, if not all, and did not look at me, an African-American male, or have the best interest at hand. So why are we as a country still pretending? The issues I stand before you today in protest are not superficial. It's much deeper than that. Systematic racism did not happen overnight. If we truly want to get the core of these issues and fix them, we need to tear down and reconstruct the foundation on which these issues stand on. How can we say we're united as a country when history has shown we've been everything but that in which we speak? The model of our country was founded upon has not missed it, its mark entirely, depending on the angle in which you look. Because when I hear united we stand and divided we fall, I see it as it is. We have been everything but united. So we've continued to fall and fall and fall, making this model all the more true. The notion or belief that a set of laws and rules could be made, passed out, then followed without anybody enforcing these laws or overseeing that the job gets done has a lot to do with the problem. This causes a state of mind where you not only believe but realize that you're above the law. It is behooving to the Department of Corrections or police departments in our country to have police policing each other. When I think of what happened to George Floyd, I'm reminiscent of the public lynching I learned about in my history classes. His voice to me is a symbol of what the black man's voice has meant to America, because our voices and grievances have not been heard. What are we instilling in our children of the future when we have police officers who are sworn to protect and serve doing things like that on national television? In the same breath, I thank God for phone cameras. Now we are able to document and shed light on these issues we've been yelling at the top of our lungs about for centuries. But even camera footage won't matter if our government continues to cover up these incidents like we've witnessed something out of a David Blaine show. Minorities have been made to look like liars over generations of time. Even our truth is held to a different standard. These same egregious acts happen in prisons all the time, but are less likely to be captured because recording devices are not allowed in prisons and are considered contraband. But even when the footage is provided, we are less likely to see justice prevail because of the double standards and privileges given to the very people who are supposed to serve and protect. Am I supposed to believe it's an accident we're not allowed recording devices? Inmates having a camera should not be an issue, but society is fooled into believing it's an issue and only the negative aspects are brought to light, yet not the positives. Once again, a one-sided narrative. In all reality, cameras are not allowed in prison for personal use because it would expose our country's dirty laundry. For instance, legal slavery, police brutality, government extortion, price gouging, lack of due process, mail tampering, sexual assault, etc. I once heard an African proverb that said, until the lions have their own historian, history of the hunt will always glorify the hunter. I've never quite knew the impact that proverb had until now. I think that time has come. I've always been told that definition of insanity was doing something over and over and over again, expecting a different result. Using the definition above, I'd say the United States of America has been insane for centuries. Prison lives matter. This was from a prisoner, and it was so true what he said, and I've heard this from so many other prisoners. It was a lengthy letter, but it was worth reading.
Definitely. I agree. I'll let Lo talk.
He touched on so many different bases in that letter. Very thorough, very well written, and it had a lot of questions. You know, more questions than answers. One thing I would like to point out is, you know, speaking as a black male, you know, speaking as an African American man who is incarcerated, it is definitely ironic that, you know, we are a minority race, but yet we do make up the majority of the prison population in state prisons across the U.S. You know, so that should say something right there. That saying that even though we're the minority, but does that mean that blacks commit more crimes than whites?
No.
As far as the criminal justice system, with regards to the criminal justice system, you know, when these prosecutors and these judges, you know, sentence someone for being convicted of a crime and sends them to prison, the function of prison is supposed to serve two purposes. And one is punishment and the other is rehabilitation. When Wisconsin enacted the Truth in Sentencing Law, they took away the rehabilitation part and just made it all about punishment. And the point is, that is not the function of the prison system. That's not supposed to be the function of the prison system. It's supposed to be about punishment and it's supposed to be about rehabilitation. Like I said, due to my case, I am considered a violent offender. However, the prison that I am housed at, the majority of the inmates here are convicted of some type of sexual offense, a lot of sexual offenders. With that being said, they look at violent offenders as the worst of the worst. Oh, these people need to be incarcerated. You know, we don't need these type of people in our society. They're very dangerous. You know, you don't want them around your family and your children. But yet you have people who are convicted of sexual assault crimes who have either molested or sexually abused or sexually assaulted a child or a woman for that matter. And, you know, these people are allowed to take programs or receive what they consider SOT, sex offender treatment, and they are released at some point. And a lot of times, in a lot of cases, their prison sentences are not very lengthy. So that's just another example of how the system is so unbalanced. You know, one thing I like to say is that some people make mistakes and some people just catch bad breaks. You know, I myself was one of the ones who happened to catch a bad break. Who do you blame? Do we blame, you know, who do we blame? But, and that's the thing, though, is like there's so many questions, so many things to ponder, but we're not getting the answers and we're not getting the results that we would like to see, that we hope for, that we expect.
But you know, I want to say, in Tom's Tom, since we've been talking, he's been interviewed. Tom has a lot of good plans that, you know, that he'd like to do in helping you and others. And we have gotten volunteers from universities around the country. I mean, really overwhelmingly getting volunteer law students and paralegals. And this might be an opportunity because, and Tom and I will be talking about that, but this might be an opportunity because I truly believe that this year, 2020, is going to bring about a lot. It's going to bring about a lot of negative and positive. Right now, prison reform is something that has been talked about for a long time now, and I have to admit there is a few politicians in Massachusetts that are really focused on trying to abolish these harsh sentences, life and life without parole, that are trying to work with the prisons, the Department of Corrections, in improving the things that are going on in the prisons. It's not even about, and a lot of these prisoners, most of these prisoners, all of these prisoners, because no one is born bad, something happened along the way. A lot of these prisoners that are in, not only for the wrongfully convicted, but also prisoners who have made a mistake, were victims before becoming offenders. A lot of them, culture to me is not just about race. Culture to me is, there's different cultures within a home, within a family unit, because not everybody's the same. So we have people that were brought up, in, unfortunately brought up in the cities, in the ghettos, in poor poverty. We have a lot that were without fathers, without siblings. We have a lot that got involved with someone of a different race, and something happened. It was a toxic relationship or whatever. And these so-called righteous on the outside sometimes are the ones that cause mass incarcerations because of their righteous attitudes and their better than our attitude. But one of the things is, like I said, with a lot of these law students, they're really motivated to start doing some things. And like you mentioned with your case, first of all, you don't have the money. A lot of prisoners, that's why they're still in prison, because they don't have the money to hire a lawyer. And I had two lawyers ripped me off for $15,000, which I'm still paying on the credit cards because of those two people, Zelkine and Kelly, one from Spokane, Washington, one from Boston, Massachusetts. These people are scum because these are the type of lawyers that make it difficult for people to be released. They meet with a person one time, and then all of a sudden they start writing all these different things back and forth between the two of them or the three of them. Before you know it, you're getting charged. They're billing. It's ridiculous. So not only is it the Department of Corrections commissioners out there, it's the lawyers out there, it's the corrupt judges and courts, it's the corrupt prosecutors. They need to reform everything, prison reform, parole reform, court reform. They need to. Because it's another thing. Individuals are all different. And I know we're going to continue this conversation because I not only came on late, but I'm taking up a lot of time. But I have to get this out because people like, we have to admit one thing. We have to admit that even though there is still so much racism in this country, and these protests now all over the world demonstrate how people are getting fed up with it, because we're not just looking at the blacks and browns that are in the protests around the world. We're looking at the whites, the reds, the beige. We're looking at people actually coming together in unity to put a stop to all this craziness. But we also see in one situation where one of the police officers did the kneeling with the protesters in support of the protesters and then goes back to his department and tells them he could kick himself in the ass for doing it. Now, what kind of hypocrisy is this? So we don't have sincere people throughout the world or the country, but we do have some sincere people that are really trying to make a difference. And there are whites out there right now, because if it wasn't for the whites, I saw a lot more whites in some areas protesting than I saw the blacks and browns, which goes to show you that there are some that are sincere and that really want to put a stop to it, that want to live in harmony, that want to live in peace and comfort and all of these things, while you have others that can't stop doing damage to others because of their races, the pigmentation on their skin. And what they're doing by their ignorance shows in their face, that anger, that hatred, it shows in their face. You can tell the difference between someone that's good and someone that's evil. And anybody that wants to make so many problems for prisoners, for people out in the streets, anybody that wants to do it, they're miserable themselves. They were raised to hate. Instead of being raised in a loving home, they were raised in such a home that had so much hatred. I don't see how they could have possibly given their children any of that love. These are things that need to be changed. And I'm sorry to say it, but unless we see more politicians doing something, and all these things, the changes that they're talking about making because of these protests and all these black people being killed, all these changes they're making, if they're really sincere about it, they're going to make those same changes in the prisons, because they're going to realize that prisoners are in there, a lot of them are in there for the same reasons that the things are going on out in the communities.
That's true. Okay, I'm a black male. Tom is a white male.
And I would never have believed Tom was a white man. When Tom first came on the show, he talked so much like a black man. I said, I don't know. He's got to have some black somewhere. And then it dawned on me, DNA all came from Africa.
Yes. But, you know, I'm a black man. Tom is a white man. And there is at least a 14-15-year difference between us. Like I said earlier, he always likes to credit me for, you know, being like a big brother, you know, being like an inspiration to him. And, you know, he's been out 4 years now. And been out 4 years now, right?
Yeah.
And during this whole time, like you said, we met in prison. I instantly took a liking to him because he was different, the way he carried himself. Like I said, he's a very humble young man. He's also very talented. You know, I've seen him play soccer many times. He's very talented, and, you know, he's a good-hearted person. You know, me and Tom, we come from two different backgrounds, but yet when we met, like I said, our bond was instantaneous. But since he's been home, you know, he gave me his information, and me and him talk at least once a week. But that just goes to show that the bond and the respect and the love, like, you know, we love each other as brothers. The man has been supportive of me the whole time, and, you know, he has his own life out there. You know, he has a lot of things that he you know, has to be focused on and he's doing with his life, but he also takes the time to make sure that I'm okay if I need anything. And even now, you know, I'm here on this show talking with you guys, and, you know, he's trying to get people to look at my case and show support, but that just goes to show that how much people care. If they take the time to really get to know a person or even, you know, look at a person's circumstances and have the desire to want to make a difference, you know. I mean, he doesn't owe me anything. He does all of this on his own by choice, you know. And, you know, to be honest with you, you know, a lot of times he's an inspiration to me because I've seen him get out of prison and, you know, he could have been a knucklehead and did something else foolish to got him back in prison. But, you know, he works, goes to school. You know, again, he tries to play his little sports, you know, when he can. And, you know, he's here trying to advocate on behalf of prison reform and how the system functions. And he's trying to educate the public or the masses, I should say. And, you know, so he's an inspiration to me as well. You know, there's a lot of days that I have bad days. I'm stressed. I'm depressed, you know, given my circumstances, you know. But, you know, there's times that he keeps me going because I know that I have people out there that care, that support me, and is willing to go the extra mile, is willing to fight for me to regain my freedom. A lot of people that do come back to prison, it's for one of two reasons. Either they have drug and alcohol issues, or they simply just do not have a support system out there once they are released. If you are releasing someone into the community without a strong or solid support system, 9 times out of 10, they're going to end up reoffending and coming back to prison. I am one of the ones who are fortunate to have a good support system. You know, and Tom is included into that support system.
I believe God has a reason for everything, and Tom, I believe, is one of those meanings, those reasons. And I think he's going to do a lot of good to help a lot of you while he's on the outside. I really believe that. I felt that when I first interviewed Tom. And as you mentioned, a lot of people are coming out, they have these addictions. And those, to me, I don't know why they don't just establish long-term residential treatment programs for all these different cases instead of having prisons. I cannot understand for the life of me why they have prisons. I mean, they can have the same length of time in these facilities where they're getting the treatment that they need. I trained in 2006, I trained briefly, just for a few weeks, with the Department of Corrections in mental health management. And I had one female guard. Her brother was a guard, too. So they go gung-ho, brother and sister, both guards. And I used to talk to the prisoners, and they used to joke around and everything with me. And she said, "You're not supposed to be talking. We don't talk to the prisoners." You know, when I mentioned that to the supervisor, who was at the time my supervisor while I was in training, she said, "No." She said, "I talk to the prisoners all the time." She said, "You can talk to them." So sometimes it's the individual themselves. They got this gung-ho feeling about them. Like, they got to be important to people. I don't let anybody run my life. You know, I speak for myself. They either like me or they hate me. They either agree with me or they disagree. They either respect me or not. But I am my own person. And if I see something wrong, I'm going to speak up. If I see somebody that wants to talk, somebody that's just innocently trying to carry on a conversation and feel a little bit of the outside world when they're stuck in prison and they're able to talk to somebody from the outside, I'm going to do it. But this girl, because her brother was a guard and she's a guard, all of a sudden now you're not supposed to talk to the prisoners. That, you know, I don't go for that. And that's why I'm seeing so many people, and I want to say this to the audience, please. Tom is going to give you, before the end of the show, he's going to give you a way to contact him. And I want you to start volunteering, because even if you don't think you know anything about volunteering, you can do some small things like research. You can make some calls. We have to do this as a united front. And that's why if you can contact Tom, because we're going to be working on some of these issues too. And whatever you're doing out there, all of you advocates, you're liking each and every posting that's going on out there. Pick up a phone or send an email or send a text and at least say we want to help in some way or another. We want to help these guys that are either in for wrongful convictions, those who have made first mistakes, or only we want to help those who have been in for years for crimes they committed, where they, because everybody changes if given the opportunity. I just want to say this because this is an important issue. I told Tom last week I was glad he was going to be talking on this and bringing on some people because I want the public to hear this. They can either be a part of the problem or they can be a part of the resolution. So I hope they're listening to this, and I hope that next week that there's going to be more talk about it and more people coming on and more people trying to help.
Yes, I agree. I'm just going to butt in real quick, Lope, like I said, and interrupt me if, you know, your time is short. But, you know, somebody from my background, I was very blessed. I am white. The white privilege does exist. But growing up until I was in prison, 18 years old, I never had a white friend. I never brought over a single white person to my family. It was all black or Hispanic at the time. And me growing up, I was always a leader of the group. So, yeah, I was white, and I grew up in a white household. But when I left my house every time, I was the only white person playing soccer, not all the Hispanics. When I did go to the hoods in Milwaukee, I was the only white person playing basketball there. So I've always been basically the only one like me in my crowd growing up. And Loke has already hit it on in the letter from the man, you know, sounds like a very intelligent, motivating, and very good human being. The letter you wrote, prison is different, you know, for you just to Google a term and see a percentage is different. And, you know, like I said, you brought up the conversation I had with the lady before. Yeah, I am white right now, but being white and 19, 30 days after turning 19 in prison, neutral with no muscle, it's a different experience. It's a little harder. And what I just have to say is the only reason prison is so traumatic for me and such a life goal for me is when I got sentenced, I had two other co-defendants. I took the blame. They wanted to give me probation. I was white. My other co-defendant was black. The other one was an illegal Mexican. And they wanted to give me probation, and I took the blame. In my record right now, if you bring up my record, it says I held a gun to these two people's head and made them do the robbery with me. My lawyer was mad. My family was mad. It went from probation to 10 years in prison, and I didn't waver my story, not one bit. I ended up getting 4, and they got less than me. But when I went to prison, my whole life up until that point, I always stood up for myself. I don't mean to sound like a hero or anything, but that's why I talk with the confidence I talk with. The only bad memories people can bring up in the world are my armed robbery. That is it. I never bullied a student in my entire life. I never picked on a kid. I never did anything. I never was a bad friend, wasn't a bad boyfriend. I was a good human being growing up. So I always stood up for the underdog my whole life. If I seen somebody get bullied, I was the first one there. Why don't you bully me? You know, if I seen a man hit a woman, I was the first one there. Why don't you hit me? So when I went to prison, I had that same mentality where I felt like I was valued. I felt like I was someone. And the COs slowly broke me down. And the prison system slowly broke me down. Because you don't have a voice. There was no, why are you talking to me like that? I was thrown in segregation in jail right away for my first 14 days. I never experienced jail. I went from segregation for 14 days to prison. And then when I went from prison, I seen that I was a very, very, very small percentage. When you get off the bus and you go to your new prison, Loke knows what I'm talking about. I mean, come on, man. Being 19, neutral as a white boy, who do I flock to? The only white people in the prison system, not the only, but the large amount are sex offenders. The other large amount are like the DUIs and the people that don't have the reputation where it's like, you know what, they're not going to the gym. They're not going to the pull-up bar. They're a group of 40-year-old white dudes aren't coming up to us and pushing us off the pull-up bar. So it was like I had a low percentage of people that I had to flock to. And I just had to be myself over time. And eventually I ended up getting all my brothers. But why I say that is just because I seen the system. You know, when I first got sentenced, I felt sorry for myself. I was crying. I was in my cell like, yeah, initially I was happy because I was fighting 10 years. That was what the DA wanted. But when I got 4, I was a little happy. I'm not going to lie, because I thought I was getting more. But then I felt sorry for myself when I was calling my friends. And when I was in Dodge, when I was in a maximum security prison, I was in the same unit where Jeffrey Dahmer was in, and all these killers. I seen somebody get stabbed, and it's not that high percentage to see somebody get stabbed in Wisconsin prison. It's really not like California and stuff. But I seen somebody get stabbed on my first way to trial. I seen all the blood, and I was 19 years old. I shouldn't be seeing this. And then I would call my friend that night, and they were in Wisconsin campus dorm. They were in the college setting drinking, and I felt sorry for myself because I was the most talented soccer player in my school. I should have been in college soccer playing, and I just felt sorry. No, you go.
I'm sorry. Okay. Thanks again for having me, and talk to you soon, brother.
All right.
No, you have to go.
I'll put out your information. I'll put out his information before I hang up.
Okay, Luna. Okay. Thanks again for having me. Appreciate it.
Nice to meet you, Landerson. We'll have you back on again, hopefully.
Okay, you are a very gracious host, and you're doing a wonderful job. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
Right, no,
thank you so much.
Okay, take care, guys. Be safe.
All right. And basically why I say that, Leona, is when I went to prison, I felt sorry for myself. I did. I was looking at state clothes. I was looking at myself in the mirror, and I couldn't believe how far I fell in life. And you know, people talk about it, have their freedom taken away. You don't really know what having your freedom taken away is until you have it taken away. And most people that are naive, maybe not nowadays, but when I first went in, they were like, yeah, well, you deserve it. You did something. But my point was, listen, this is a death sentence. This isn't 4 years. This is the rest of my life. That's what's wrong with the system. This is the rest of my life. I have to pay a harsh penalty for my crimes. And I went from feeling sorry to myself to feeling grateful by meeting people like Landers, Loke, and meeting people like like we had LeBron on the show, which he'll join again. He got a job, thankfully. He works 6 days a week, 50 hours. So he just started a job. He'll call in when he can. But like people like that, every person I started meeting, I was like, wow, they have it rough. They do, and they were all of color. I seen them being mistreated. They didn't have the mentality I did, where if a CO said something negative to me, like I explained on one show with the woman that called, that where I stood up for myself. They didn't, and that was just who I was. Yes, I did have the support system, but I was like that since day one, where I was like, you're not going to talk to me like this. And I started seeing like, oh my God, I never even talked to a human being that went to prison. And then I just started to see the system. I was living it. And I was seeing, like, how does nobody ever say anything about this? How have I not known about this place? This is hell on earth. And then I started asking, who's ever made it from this? I bring up this a lot to Landers, to everybody, people that spent 18 years. If you would ask Landers, hey, Landers, who is the one person who has made it from the Wisconsin prison system, the one person that has money, millions of followers, a rapper, an actor, a lawyer, an activist for prison, a professional sports player, who is that person? He couldn't tell you one single name. And you start realizing, like, wow, nobody from prison, at least this state, has made it. Isn't that a little shocking to anybody in Wisconsin? Nobody's ever made it. Nobody's ever had lawyer dreams. Nobody's ever had actor dreams. Nobody's ever had these regular dreams and goals like you do. In prison, yeah, they do. But there's a reason why they don't make it. It is such a harsh place. It is hell on earth. And that's what made me change my whole mentality and made me think, like, man, if I'm able to survive this, if I'm able to not go crazy in here, if I'm able to get through this and not just do my time, not let my time do me, but do my time, this is my life goal. This is why God put me on this earth. Yes, I want to play sports. Yes, I have my individual goals, like Landis has talked about, with school and working and things I want to achieve personally, where I believe it will help me achieve much bigger things. But once I went to prison, I realized that, you know what, there's just not many people that can do it. Black, brown, white. There's just not many people that can be locked in a cage and be belittled for years and have their support system waver. Yes, I had a support system, an excellent support system, but that wavered, you know, that wavered to a little. And yes, I still had my little is a lot to compare to most people, but it wavered throughout prison. It definitely did. I lost a lot. I gained some. But when I got out, I told everybody before I got out, here's what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to do in life. This is my time frame. And slowly, my support system has increased dramatically because now I have a resume where when I said, I'm getting out, I'm getting surgery, I'm getting a job, I'm going to get this car, I'm going to move out on my own. In 2 years, I'm going to go to California. I'm going to get dogs. Everything I live right now, I'm not going to go to the bar. I'm going to stay motivated. I'm going to continue working out. I'm going to stay, I'm going to stay sober. Everything I talk about,
Can you give your information to how others can contact you, because we're running out of time right now?
Yes, my information, my email is t.dormer, D-O-R-M-E-R, 89, at yahoo.com. My Instagram is PITT1.345. Or my Facebook is Tom, T-O-M, Dormer, D-O-R-M-E-R. You can add me on any of those three platforms. Landris, I'm going to give out his information. It's L-A-N-D-R-I-S, his last name, J-I-N-E-S. His inmate number is 326049. And the place where he is at, if you want to write him a letter, you just have to address it to RCI, P.O. Box 900, Sturtevant, Wisconsin, S-T-U-R-T-E-V-A-N-T, 3177.
Great. Thank you so much, Tom, for being on. And we will have you back on next Thursday. In the meantime, you and I have some talking to do, because there's a way to be able to help your friends. This is what your mission was from the very beginning. So we are going to be signing off now. And, Tom, I thank you so much for being on with us. And when you have a chance, if you can give me a call, I'd appreciate it.
No problem. I will.
Okay. You take care.
Bye.
We are now signing off, everyone.